Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM HALDB, a strong player in IMS online reorganization conference call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the call over to Sally Tuscany. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Deanna. I appreciate the introduction. And thank you all to our customers for joining us today, and I'm glad to be your host. Today we're going to be talking about the IMS HALDB, and I know a lot of you were on the call that we had about HALDB 2 weeks ago, and we're glad to see you back here again today. Our main speaker today is Christian Copen, and Christian comes to us from PEC Software, who is one of our premier development partners, and he's going to be discussing helpful tips on how to convert your databases to HALDB and also some of the tools that are available to speed up and to simplify the process. Thank you very much for your time, Christian, and thank you to our customers for joining us. And now I'd like to turn it over to Christian. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Christian Copen, and I'm talking about today about converting to HALDB. So let's go and immediately into it, and I hope everybody has the PowerPoint in front of them. Let's go immediately to page 2. And here we say, basically, how do we convert to HALDB as main point, how to maintain partitions once we are on HALDB, and last but not least, we have additional tools we might need and take advantage of. So let's go to the things. First is how to go and convert to HALDB. The problem is it is not necessarily an easy task. It needs an experienced DBA, and the good question is if you in that installation still have one. Sorry if I offended you, but the fact of life is that we old dinosaur DBAs are basically dying out, and there are no new experienced DBA available. So it's something we have to think about. Number two, it's not only needs an experienced DBA, it also costs some time. And if I have an experienced DBA, he's probably busy with something else. One of the problems is also that the database has to be offline to do this. And unfortunately, our largest databases are in 24/7. And how can we do this? So this is also a little tiny problem we need to address. And last but not least, the conversion process is a little bit complex. We have an awful lot of new JCL and procedures and things we are not used to. So that's also a reason why we probably need an experienced DBA. We have complicated data set names we are not used to, and all this adds up to a problem. And last but not least, fallback. How do I go back just in case something happens, or how do I go back after a couple of days? So this is what we want to talk about today, and so let's go into it. Okay, whoever wants to convert to HALDB by himself, this is what you have to do. First task is how to find the high keys. Finding the high keys is something you have to run a utility for, which is called MATO, or DFS MATE 0. And you have a few parameters where you can basically say what type of partitioning you want, and he will find the high keys for you. And remember the output from that run, if this is the one you want to take, and keep it, you need it a little bit later. The next thing to be done is you have to change the DBD from normal full function to HALDB, and this is not only the DBD, you have to do it for all secondary indexes. And if you have logical relationships, you have to do all other databases which have logical relationships. Basically, the rule is there is no mixture. Either everything is HALDB or nothing is HALDB. So an all or nothing deal. Converting to the secondary indexes to Haldidi, please check that you don't have applications which read the secondary indexes as a database. Lots of people don't understand this item. This is basically you have a PSB which has a PCB with a secondary index as a database in there. Why is this a problem? The problem is that the slash SX field, which is used to qualify otherwise non-unique index key, grows from 4 bytes to 8 bytes, and if your application basically needs to increase the key size by these 4 bytes. So this is very rare, but there are applications that do this. Please do that. Check. The other question is, how large is your secondary index? And do we need more than one partition? And if your secondary index is already fairly large, it's highly likely because your index record size will grow. It goes from your current record size, this is probably something in the 20s, will probably go into something in the 50s. So we have on this overhead the exact formula. It adds 28 bytes as a pointer, and also the primary database root segment is stored in there, so if your root segment is 50 bytes, that would be added to that index record size. So, something has to be done about that too if your index is already big. The next thing you have to do is build all your IDCAM statements to allocate all those partitions. And each partition has a very interesting naming rule, and you basically say, okay, I have a high-level data set name qualifier called named as DSM prefix, and then you add to that the partition number and the data set letter, which could be A, could be X for if it's a PHIDEM, and is an L for the ILDS. So all those data sets have to be allocated, and you have to basically do space calculation on that. Go to the next page. We have to prepare those partitions, and we do it either with DBRC statements using the DBRC batch utility, basically initdb or init.part statements, or use the ISPF-based program. If you use the ISPF-based program, please, please, please use a temporary recon where you do this, and then use an export. There's an export capability in that ISPF-based thing in order to do the import then later to your real recon. So now we are basically prepared. We have the DVD prepared, we have our IDCAMs prepared, and we have our DBRC prepared. We now have to take the database offline and run the unload. If you don't have any utilities from any ISV, or you have to use the standard IMS utilities, please use the conversion option, which is named MigrateX. MigrateX is there to speed up the process for secondary indexes, and because of that it creates multiple unload data sets, one for the primary database and two each for the secondary index data sets. The two each is, one is for the sort statement, the other one is the unload data set for the indexes. You need those data sets later for the reload, and we see where you use them. Now, the next step is a little bit a scary one. You have to delete all the databases and its indexes from DBRC. And from here on out, there is no way back, or let's say not an easy way back, unless you saved everything. Activate the change DBDs. Basically, the DBD changes you staged have now to be activated. Basically, move them into your DBD library. Run and define the partitions. So basically either run the DBRC list or do the import, run the export list. Okay, next page. You have to run the allocation. And after the allocation, there is a new thing which we never had in full function. FastPass guys probably know it. This is partition initialization. This is what needs to be done. Okay, and here is one tip. Make sure that it runs on all partitions when you're redoing the allocation. And the way to make sure is that you turn on the init needed flag again for all partitions so that the init is redone when you redo the allocation. Otherwise, he doesn't do that. So basically, the partition initialization works the way if a partition does not have the init needed flag on, he does not do that. And the first time through, he would turn it off and he would never do that again, but you did a new allocation. So there are some kind of trouble spots. There is, of course, also an overwrite in the partition initialization, which basically say do them all no matter what. So it's probably also very good to use that. So now we have the partition initialization done correctly. We have to run the reload for the primary database and run the reload for the secondary indexes, which needs to be sorted. And remember, at the unload time, we had two data sets. One is the sort statement, which is basically you plug in that data set as a this in for the sort, and this output from the sort is now basically an HD unload file, which you put into HD reload. So we have done our reload for the primary database. We have done the secondary indexes. Now we have to do the image copies. Keep in mind, if we do the image copies, that these two new data sets don't have image copies. So there is a new data set in Honeybee, which you probably know already. It's called an ILDS, indirect list data set, and a primary index, which do not have image copies. Actually, if you try to make image copies of those data sets, you get an error. So something to think about recovery. If you recover a database from its image copies, the ILDS and the primary index will not be recovered. And because of that, you have to basically rebuild them, and there's the ILDS and primary index rebuild utility available as well. Okay, we are now done with reloading. We have done our image copies. We now have to do the ACB again for our changed databases and do our online changes, which may include some application changes, because if we had applications reading the secondary index and where the SX field increased from 4 to 8, these applications now need to be included in the online change. So that's all what you have to do when you do it by hand. Okay, let's go to the next page. How to do it with the tool. And we have basically two versions. And let's talk about the very first version, and that is an ISPF-based application. I call it our guided tool to do a HaldDB conversion. And it creates all the necessary single steps which we listed in the beginning, one at a time, creates everything, and the only thing the user has to do is submit and check if it ran correctly. So basically let it run, wait until it's complete, and check if return code is zero. And it does everything. It creates all the necessary JCL and control cards. It changes your DBD. So it basically picks up the current DBD from DBD that retranslates it into source code, changes it accordingly. And then it creates all the partition definitions, so you don't have to do these DBRC statements. important thing is also it creates all the IDCAMS allocation statements and knows how big to allocate them, because we can see the current file size and we know how we distribute, so we can basically calculate how big your new data sets have to be done. The only thing the user has to do is, as I said, there's JCL which gets created, and the only thing somebody has to do is submit. And then when it's done, it automatically then rebuilds the next set of JCL, and so on and so on. And if for some reason the JCL gets lost, or somebody cancels the job or something like that, it can be recreated if necessary. We have conversion options provided through ISPS panels, and I have put in a few. Next page. This is basically the rules how to define a primary database, and let's go to the very first item, that is, how do we want to make the partitions? You can say either I want a certain amount of partitions, like in this example we said, okay, that's what we want, and the number of partitions is 2. Or you can say, option 2, I want my partitioning based on size, and if you would select a 2, you can specify how big your partition should be in megabytes. And this is basically the one I recommend. And why do we do this? Yeah, if you don't have ideas about how to partition it by keys, and we come to that in a second, do you really care what your keys is? So if you will still want to see the database as a whole, but you need to partition this because of size, you really don't care about your key boundaries. So number 2 is basically your best option. If you select number 1 and you have a 20 gig database that tell me to partition, that's not gonna function, because a partition size is limited to 4 gig, and you don't want to go to a partition size which is already at the boundaries. Okay, there's another option. If you have an idea about your keys, you can specify those keys. Okay, some other conversion options are here. If you're coming from the previous partitioning product, you basically can say, okay, how do I want to partition? And there is an option either to say, okay, it is already partitioned and I have either a number of partitions, or in case of HIDEM, I had specified high keys, I want to reuse them, or basically let me rebuild them. Okay. Let's go to the next page. This deals with secondary indexes. Keep in mind, secondary indexes could be big, and because of the increased record size. So basically, how should we separate, how should we partition secondary indexes? And again, here in this example, we said we want 2 secondary indexes. My recommendation is to use option 2, a fixed size, and basically go to a size of 1 gigabyte, and then you have enough room, because your physical data set size is still 4 gigabyte, but you have now enough room for free space CI and CA. Okay, so these are a few rules how to basically define partitions, and that's almost everything you have to do. There are a few other parameters, but they are basically self-explanatory. Some have to do with how to build the data set name and how to create partition names out of the DBD name. Okay, let's go to the next page. And here we have our new option. And the new option is to do everything with JCL in one single step. And here we basically have a control cut example where we say, okay, we want to convert, and we specify a name of the database which is DBD name there, and we want to partition by size of 2 gigabyte. And there is another parameter we haven't talked about, that is DVD pattern. This pattern is being used to build the partition name. And here in this example, we basically say, oh, let me go back a little bit to partition name. We all know that the partition name is only 7 characters. This is due to the fact that we need the 8 character for the data set level. So the partition name is only 7 characters. So if I use 6 characters from the DBD name and use the 7th character to build a partition name, I can use from 0 to 9 and A to Z, and that's exactly 36. So if we have a DBD pattern of 6 characters, we can have at maximum 36 partitions. And for a DBD pattern of 5 characters, we can have more than 1,000. You can do the math, 36 times 36. Okay, so this is probably a problem for everybody to find a good partition name. What we do also is verify that those names which were created are not currently existing database or partition names in the recon, because that would be a conflict. Again, then we have partition number and partition size, and or by keys, the same thing we had in the previous ISBS tunnels. Here we have it as control cards. And the new thing in this single-step conversion is we have what we call a takeover concept. Everything is done to the final end, but it's done temporary. But when everything has worked, it's done for good. So we basically do everything temporary. And once all has finished, then we do what we call a takeover, and that is basically do the DBSC work, copy the DBD back, and all this stuff. And this basically makes us kind of independent. If something fails and we haven't gotten to take over yet, nothing really has happened, and our database is still in a good shape, we don't have to do anything. Once we are in takeover, we have restartability during takeover. So if we, let's say, got a catalog error because of some weird catalog situation, we can basically restart the conversion process. We automatically realize that this is a restart and redo the takeover from that point where we left off. Let's go to the next page. Let's now deal with my database is 24/7. How do I take it offline? I can't. And basically, this is an inhibitor. I can really never go to HaldeDB with 24/7 databases because of I can't take them offline. And of course, we didn't like that answer. So do we really, really have to have the database offline? There is a product called Online Reorg Facility, which is currently doing a reorganization while the database is up, and also can do HaldeDB reorganizations. So that might be probably a solution which can help us. Since a lot of you probably don't know nothing about, or a lot, very little about Online Reorg Facility, let's talk about Online Reorg Facility for a short moment. Diane, did you manage to get one on the line?
I'm sorry, he is not.
Okay, then let me continue. So let's skip page 12, and let's go immediately to page 13. Let's talk about the Online Reorg Facility for a short period of time. As we can see, in this page, we have an online viewer facility which can do HDAM, HIDAM, or the HolyDB equivalents, secondary indexes, and also partition secondary indexes. All of those can be reorganized online. So, next page. It also allows to have a data sharing environment. So if we have multiple IMSs sharing the data with block level sharing, we can basically do an online reorg for those databases, and it really doesn't matter where the online reorg job runs. It can run on any LPAR which is part of the IMS LPAR. As you can see, in this case, we have three IMSs. All of them are in the same coupling facility. They connect through that, and we have an online VR job, which is also connected to the coupling facility, and we have a disorganized databases or indexes. The IMSs, it gets explained better on the next page. The page is a little bit busy, but it's very difficult to put everything in one page. On the left side, the light blue is the IMS control region, and on the right, on the dark blue side is the online VR job. Let me explain very shortly what's going on here in that picture. The IMS control regions have the original IMS databases and access them with read and write, so basically they update that database. And the online reorg facility does the same thing. He has a phase which is called a copy phase, where he reads the original database and copies it into a shadow data set, and then with that shadow data set, we do a reorganization, and you see that on the very right side. We run an unload into a temporary unload file, and the temporary unload file is basically input to the reload, secondary indexes are rebuilt, prefix resolution, update, and image copy. So everything that needs to be done for reorganization is getting done in the reorg phase. Then we have what we call an apply phase. All the changes which have been done to the original database are now repeated to the shadow databases. And then we have the takeover phase, where the databases are DBR'd, so the original database is getting DBR'd. Nobody is updating that original database anymore. We have run all the changes against the shadow data sets, and now we are basically exchanging the data set names and do some DBRC work to tell what we did, that we did a reorg and this type of stuff. We go to that a little bit more in detail. Next page. The copy phase, we synchronize the database with a stop and start command, which basically closes the databases very shortly and reopens it right away, so that we have a synchronization point at that point in time. And then we copy the original data set into the shadow, and on top of that, we copy the updates which occurred during that time on to the shadows. Basically, what we do at this point in time in the copy phase, we basically do a recovery to current to the shadow data sets. So at the end of the copy phase, we have two identical data sets, and if the data sets had a primary index, we rebuild the primary index from the shadow data set. So we have, at that point in time, two identical data sets. Let's go now to the next page. During that time, we now capture the changes which have occurred in the online system and keep them in a temporary file. And now we can do the reorganization. And the reorganization is unload, pre-reorg, if necessary, reload. There's something in reload if you have the HP tools and you have a user exit. You can use that user exit here in the reload phase. This reload exit will, this user exit will also be called in the apply phase. Okay, and then we have building the secondary indexes and do image copies. And okay, you know the drill. So everything is done during that time. In the apply phase, we basically replicate. We are now on page 19. In apply phase, we replicate all those changes which have occurred against the database at that point in time. And when we are almost caught up, we basically flag the database as being no longer available and do a DBR against the primary database. And we then finish with the captured. Eventually, all those captured changes have been applied, and then we have two logically identical data sets. They are no longer physically identical, but they are logically identical, basically meaning they have exactly the same IMS data. And then we basically switch over to the takeover phase, which is on page 20. And at this point in time, we take an internal checkpoint, so we are restartable for the takeover phase. And we do now lots of DBSC notifications. We have to tell DBSC that we did a reorg. We have to tell DBSC that we had image copies. We have to tell DBSC that we had a batch application, which is our change apply, and that it had logs. And we have to notify an alloc and so on. The logs are basically adjusted a little bit later at the end. And then we have to rename all the original data sets. And if we rename them from the original name to a .t, like temporary, and then we rename the shadows, which had been allocated as .s, like shadow, and then we can either, once we have renamed the shadows to the original name, basically dropping the s, then we can either delete or rename the existing t's, which were the original data sets, to s, or basically delete them. And if somebody did a change to the DVD, we copy the DVD back into the DVD library so that everything is now as it's supposed to be. Let's go to the next page. And then we can implement an online change, also, which is not kind of the online change you do. It's kind of an internal online change. We perform ACD again for all the changed DVDs. If you change DVDs, copy them to A and B, and basically request that the DMB is being refetched. Keep in mind, the online systems are still in DBR. And from there on out, once we have basically replaced the DMB in the online systems, and then we basically can give the database, make the database available again. Okay. And at the end of takeover, we, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, we still have to change the timestamp in the change apply phase, but that's a minor detail. But the database is already available. That's just in a nutshell how ORF works. Let's go now to a few issues which have to do with stopping databases and this type of thing. I'm now on page 24. Stopping databases, basically meaning DBRing databases, is a problem when we have BMPs, because we know if we have a BMP which runs, a DBR will fail. And BMPs are internally by IBM, by IMS treated as long-term running, and if you do a DVR against the BMP, the DVR fails. So basically what we have to do is we have to pause a DVD, a BMP, and this can be done either two ways. Either you have the program restart facility of, from the tools, or we in OIF have a control region front end which can handle that. So what those things do is either the BMPs are just coming up, so they get paused until the database is restarted, or existing BMPs are paused at the next checkpoint. And it's slightly different how it's done, and how DB the BMP is basically put in wait until the DB is restarted in the checkpoint. And if it's not a HALDB, we give it a resource unavailable event, and then the BMP basically terminates. But since we are in the front end, the job does not disappear. Only from an IMS point of view, the BMP is gone, but not from an MDS point of view. And when the database is started again, the BMP is automatically restarted without anybody needing any to do. Next page, what happens to the transactions? Well, that's actually very easy. Transactions which are scheduled against a DBR database are put on the suspend queue. And the suspend queue is basically automatically released whenever you issue a start command for that database. So that is not a big deal. There we are completely covered. What happens with kicks? If I have a kicks transaction and I'm not running through a DBCTL or system, kicks basically does a scheduled PSB. And the scheduled PSB will fail when a database is DBR'd or unavailable. And then it depends on what the application does in kicks, and if the application fails, it goes back to the very last ET in kicks, and this could be days earlier. So what we have basically done is we let the scheduled PSB wait if this is for the database we currently have in our short-term stop. Same is, next page is true for ODBA. They have the same behavior pattern like kicks. Also, they are treated as short-term lift from IMS. So basically meaning treated short-term lift means whenever you have a DBR or and there's a kick thread up or an ODBA thread up, it will not fail the DBR. Remember, on a BMP it will fail, but on these one it will not. So we basically put those threads into wait when they do the schedule. Okay, let's go on page 28. We have some capabilities of controlling when DBRs can be done. And this is part of ORF. We can specify a window. And here you see basically an example takeover window is between 2 and 6 a.m. And if it fails, go to the operator and ask what needs to be done. So that's basically the action is done if it fails. We cannot do the takeover in that window. What shall we do? And the operator has done some things. This is a way of controlling when the takeover will take place. So this is a capability OIF already has. Okay, this was all I wanted to talk about OIF. Let's now go back to HALDB and converting and maintaining partitions. And let's go now to page 30. We are back to converting. So we basically can see that we have an engine which can do something. And if you see what ORF did, it could create a shadow data set. It can capture changes which occurred during that conversion process, and it can reapply those changes at the end. The changes have been captured as non-HALDB and will be applied to an HALDB. This is not a big problem because the changes have been captured in an application sense, and the application really does not know that the database is different. So this changes to HALDB, except let's say the secondary index SX, is transparent to the application. And we had an online change interface. So this was basically our assets we had. So we basically went ahead and do it. Let's go to the next page, 31. There is one limitation. The ISPF guided tour is not capable of doing this, so we only do it in our single step tool. And if you remember our single step statement, we had this convert statement, had a DBD name, I changed the partitioning rule slightly, basically saying I want 5 partitions. And the only new parameter is now here, online yes. So this is basically how to go from an offline conversion to an online conversion. I add an additional parameter, that control card, and that is it. There are some additional control cards possible which relate to OIF, but there are defaults for that. And I don't want to go to, let's say, the control card logic here. It would take too much time. And, of course, the takeover is now slightly different. We can do an ACD gen, but that is where we have to stop because we cannot do the short online change we did in OAuth because the ACB does not allow. There is a flag in the ACBs which basically tells that the PSB has HALDBs or not. And since this is something we cannot change, the user must do the online change. That's basically moving the stuff to ACB like A and B. And you may have to do an application change anyway because of, remember, the secondary indexing. If you don't know which PSBs you have to do, we have a utility inside which gives you the name of all PSBs in your ACB lib for a specified DBD. And remember, there is this window parameter in OIF where you can kind of specify in which time frame this takeover would take place. So you can control it when it happens. Okay. Let's go now to maintenance of partitions. So we have done now our conversion to HALDB, and what happens now? So we're on HALDB, everything is happy and cozy, and we have separated our data by different high keys into different partitions, and now delete, inserts, and replaces, and all this wonderful stuff happens. New database records will be inserted. Do we know which partition? We probably don't. And some database records get deleted. Do we know in which partitions? Probably not. So over time, the contents and the amount of data in partitions is going to change. Some partitions may have less data, which is probably not a problem. So we have databases, partitions which are a little too big, too small. Sorry, too big allocated, but that's not really a problem unless we have stepped on space. Some partitions may have grown, and that could be a problem, and we, of course, went to partitioning because we were sick and tired of 844 problems. So if partitions are growing, we need to eventually split those partitions into two partitions or into more than two partitions. Or we want to basically rearrange our partition boundaries. We basically say, it doesn't really matter how many partitions I have, but why should I have all those little tiny partitions? Let them rearrange into one bigger partition or something like that. Why do we want to do that, consolidate smaller partitions? You know, it's a very simple reason. I have less image copies. The less partitions I have, the less image copies I have. A very simple rule. Okay, how does that work? You can do it, again, by yourself. And if you do it by yourself, remember what you did when you converted to LDDs. We have to do similar things. We need to know which keys we're going to get. So if I have one partition, I want to divide it into two. If okay, I have to have now two keys instead of one. So I have to find out those new keys, and then I basically have to prepare DBRC statements. And here's one thing I would basically caution you. Don't you ever delete the partition which has the highest key, because it immediately affects the next higher partition, and it turns there the needed flag on, and if you run partition initialization a little bit later, it would basically wipe out the data of the next higher partition. So be careful about that. So one rule is, okay, if I basically have two partitions and want to make three out of them, don't ever delete the partition which has the higher key of the two. Don't do that. So we have to know what will be the new partition numbers. And yeah, once I have defined the partition, I do a list DBRC, and then I see the partition numbers. I need those partition numbers for what? Yes, I need to allocate the dataset names, and the partition numbers are part of the dataset name. And of course, I have to make sure that those new partition names don't collide in DBRC and don't collide with control region definitions. So I shouldn't have any DBT in the recons, and I shouldn't have the same DBD in the control region defined. Okay, then it's business like usual. Prepare the IDCAM statements, take the partitions offline. Let's go to the next page. Again, following through, run the unload. Make sure that you use the DFSolDB DD statement, which basically says, I want to read only these partitions and these number of partitions. And here you already see if you want to do more than one partition, those partitions have to be in sequence, in key sequence. Again, run the DBRC list, run your IDCAMs, run partition initialization, and that will reanalyze all partitions which have the needed flag on. Remember what happens when you deleted the highest key partition. It automatically puts the needed flag on the next higher partition. So be aware of that. Run reload, do your image copies, and get the new partitions online. Okay, we don't have to do DBDs and ACBs and online change and things like that, but there's one thing you need to do. You need to do the start master with the open parameter. And that is something fairly new, and the start master with the open parameter forces the PBRC internal control, the HDD internal control blocks to be reconstructed. And then you still need to start the DBR partitions, only those which are still there. Remember, you could theoretically go from five partitions into two, and then three of those partitions are no longer existing. So you only need to restart those partitions which remain. Which one they are, okay, you remember them which you define. Let's go to the next page. Using a tool again. Again, everything what you do here manually is done by the tool. Again, we have our ISPF guided tool which does everything one by one by one, and the user only needs to submit when the previous step is ready to go and the previous step has completed normally. Let's go to the next page. Here is one of those screenshots where we basically say, what do we want to do? And in this case, we basically said, I want to split into 5 partitions here in this case. Here's one option which we had already for quite some time, the very typical thing for applications, a fast option to add partitions. If you have an application, a database, where the key is continuously growing, basically an application where you say, okay, my new key is equals old key plus one, it will automatically add to the very last partition. And it really doesn't make sense to split the last partition, because those data which I then move to into the new partition, there's no point, nobody adds to that. So we basically have here a feature also to say, okay, basically add me an empty partition at the end, which will create an empty partition which has nothing in it at the end, rather than split the partition and have data in there which we don't need there. Let's go to the next page. Here I show you also a little bit about how to specify, again, rules to create partition names, and also to specify rules to create data set names for your partitions. The data set name here in our example is, we basically append automatically to a high-level qualifier, you specify the DBD name. And then that is the name we pass on to DBSC as a DSN prefix, and then DBSC does his spiel with the DD name letter and the partition number. Let's go to the next page. The other version is doing it again with control cuts and a single step, and here instead of a convert we have a maintain, and everything else looks fairly familiar. We have a DBD name, here's a partition, and we have a rule how to create a partition name out of the DBD, and we have a parameter how many partitions we want. Here we can specify either partition or a partition list, and they are mutually exclusive, and if you specify a list, the list has to be in sequence. Let me talk about sequence of HALDB partitions. There are actually 3 different sequences. Sequence number 1 is the way you see them in DBSC, and that's the sequence of names. So you have a sequence of partition names, and that's the way you see them in DBSC, because the partition name is part of the VCON key. The other one is the sequence of partition numbers. Since partition numbers will never be reused, once you delete one, it will never be reused forever. So the next partition, no matter where it fits in the key range, will get the next higher number. And the partition numbers sequence is actually very meaningless. And the very third partition sequence is the one you define as key sequence. And that is the only important sequence we should think about. Keep in mind that it's not necessarily exactly the same. The name sequence does not have to be the same as the partition sequence, and partition number sequence, and doesn't have to be the same as the key sequence. So that's something you always should keep in mind. It takes some getting used to. And again, we talked that about already earlier. We can specify either a partition number or partition size, or we can specify keys. If you specify keys and have a partition list, we automatically replace the highest key in the list you specified with the highest key of the partitions in the list, so that no data can be lost. Let's go to the next page. How to maintain when we are in 24/7. Again, the same thing. We have databases which and partitions which cannot be offline, at least not for a long time. So we again use ORF and all this process, and let's go to that very quickly. on the next page, we remember the maintain statement. Here we have a DBD, specify the master DBD name. We have a partition list consisting out of two sequence partition, and we say we want to create three partitions out of those two, and let's do it with online equals yes. Basically, we rearrange the partition boundaries from those two partitions into three. Basically, the partition number two will stay as is because that is the highest key partition. Partition number one will be replaced with the key, and there will be a new partition defined, which I don't know which partition number it's going to be. And that will also take place. And everything is done at this point in time temporarily. And at takeover time, we define that. So once basically the partitions have been split into and at takeover time, we make it active. Keep in mind, we're using online capability, and all changes which had occurred to the partition 1 and partition 2 will now be replicated to the new three partitions. Let's go to the next page. Let me talk very shortly about a few additional tools. There are a few little tiny problems we have with HaldDBs, and one of the things is has to do with processing options load. If you ever load an HaldDB or load a single partition with HaldDB, we all know that there is no longer a work file 1 created. So in the past, when we loaded the database, IMS gave us a work file 1, which we stuck then into building secondary indexes. So either we had a tool for that, or we basically used this multi-step approach from the standard IMS thing. We now don't have a work file 1. Basically, does that mean the secondary indexes are not being built or created? That would be a disaster. So since there is no work file 1, those secondary indexes have to be created on the spot. And basically on the spot with me will mean instead of writing a work file 1, he writes a secondary index immediately to the secondary index data set during load process. And that will create a performance problem. Whoever has done that knows that. And we have dealt with that, basically delaying the insertion of the secondary index till the end. And at the very end, we sort them and insert them in sequential mode. So this will improve anything you have to do with procopt-L. And we can do that with single partitions also. If you have an application which wants to add a partition at the end and do that with procopt-L and has second indexes, this is something which will come in handy. Let's now go to the reverse. Let me give an example. You have a time-separated database. Let's say each partition represents a month, and you have 24 months, and now we start a new year, and there is a new month coming up, and somebody decides we don't need the old data from 2 years ago. Basically, delete that partition. Get rid of it. And you can delete that partition, and that's fine. It's not a big deal, unless you have secondary indexes over all those partitions. And if you have secondary indexes, you can't simply delete a partition without doing something to the secondary indexes, because there's a secondary index, and somebody doing a processing sequence with the secondary indexes will point to that deleted partition, and that will be an index error. So we will get an I or XI or some wonderful secondary index errors if we don't do anything about this. So what is the solution? If you have a secondary index tool, you basically can delete the primary partitions and then rebuild the secondary indexes for all 19 partitions. that can take some time. So the better solution is, what we do here is now basically go through those secondary indexes and delete only those records that need to be deleted. So that's doing it a little bit faster than rebuilding the whole enchilada for the 19 partitions. Let's go to the next page, a little bit DBSC support. And here is my case one. Case one is I'm having HALDBs, and I have to support my test environment. Since all HALDBs have to be registered and everybody has to, and the data set names are not, let's say, freely, and you have to allocate the data sets from the recon, everybody who is testing with different data sets has to have his own recon. So there is no doubt about that. We all know that. Now we have to give each application programmer its own recon. And now he starts testing, and let's say it's a batch test, and he tests, and what happens during testing is he is going to get into some trouble. Let's say he gets an OC7, and now he basically wants to redo it, but DBSC will now tell him, okay, I can't do that because there is a recovery pending, and there is all this wonderful stuff. Now you basically have to teach all the application people DBSC how to do start recurve, end recurve, delete subsys, and all these wonderful DBSC commands. And they will never understand that, never get it right. So this is probably not the solution you want. So basically what we did is we basically wrote a cloner of HALDB definitions, which basically uses an existing recon and clones the DBSC partition definitions and changes the DSN prefix to the one you want. And basically what it does, it creates the DBSC init DB and init part statements with all of those, with the different DSN prefix. So what you do now is give the application programmer his recon, give him the ID camps, delete, define, give him the JCL for an init recon, and then give him this, which creates the control statements for init DB and init part. And each time he has a problem, you basically say, okay, start from the beginning, delete your recon, init your recon, redefine your partitions, and you go. So everything is gone. And that is probably the easiest to understand for the application programmers. That was case one. This is now case two. We have a problem in production, and we need to copy our production data sets into some other, let's say, verification system in order to figure out what the problem is, because we can't stop the production forever, and somebody has to figure out using the data we have in production in the verification system. How have we done that in the past? We basically copy the image copies across, so we take an image copy and restore it into the different IMS system, and that's about it. This is not so easy anymore, because you can't do that with HALDB that easy. You have to make sure that your partition definition is exactly the same as it is in production in your target system. It has to be exactly the same. And if you deleted partitions, there might be unused partition numbers, and they have to be exactly the same way. The reason is because the image copy contains in the A data set the partition number. And if this doesn't fit, you are basically out of luck. So what we basically did is we already know about this cloning with a different DSN prefix. On top of that, we also copy all the non-fuzzy image copy records. And they were basically copied to a different recon. And we also copy the ID CAM statements you probably need in order to allocate those files with the different DSN prefix. And once this is done, we have now in our target IMS system, we know those image copies, and we have the right DBSC definitions All we have to do now is generate CL recache in that system, and it automatically will restore the image copies to those new defined data sets. So this is basically ideal for transporting the data sets to a different IMS system. Okay. Let's go to the next page, and this is my last page. Fallback. Remember, we talked about a little bit about fallback with our takeover concept, so the immediate fallback is really not necessary since we don't do anything if something failed in the process of conversion. But we might have to go back after several days. So we have been in production on HALDBs for a few days and have to go back for an application reason, whatever that reason is. Let's assume we have to go back. How do we do that? During conversion, we had a few options to save the DVDs. We have a few options to save your DBOC statements, so we know what databases and DVDs groups we had and recovery groups we had and these type of things. So we can basically rebuild the old DBOC environment to a degree, of course, and then we can go back and say, okay, fine, unload now the HALDB. And as we know, the unload format is slightly different for a HALDB than for a non-HALDB. Basically what we do then, we change the unload format from the HALDB to a non-HALDB. And now we have an HD unload data set, which is non-HALDB. We have saved the old DVD. You activate all those things and then reload into using standard reload. So this is basically a way of going back. And what I can't do is, let's say if your data has been grown in that days so it doesn't fit anymore into the boundaries you had, that's nothing I can do about. But getting you back if the data still fits size-wise, that's what we can do. Okay. I'm basically through. Do we have questions and answers?
Thank you, sir. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please be sure your mute function is turned off so your signal reaches our equipment. And we'll pause just a moment to allow everyone a chance to signal by pressing star 1. And we'll go to Greg Lang with AT&T.
Yes, with using ARF as part of the conversion, HCMA conversion online, does that mean that if we run ARF without HAL databases, we're just running it to do online re-args of full function databases, that he'll allow us to change DVD lengths and database structures?
Yes. ARF allows a few, let's say, DVD changes. There are changes which I cannot allow, and that is hierarchical structure changes, which are application changes. You can't do that. But you can change segment length, so basically what's probably most interesting, HDAM definitions.
So you can't change the hierarchy, but you can change...
You can change the hierarchy to a degree, as long as the same parent-child relationship is there.
Say it again, please.
As long as the same parent-child relationship is there. I cannot introduce a new parent during reorganization. That's an application change.
So he doesn't support all DVD changes?
Not everything you can think of, no.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. We'll go to Gail Braswell of Bank of America.
Hi, thank you. This is Gail Braswell. I'd like you to talk somewhat about free space and the free space percentage factor and the free space blocking factor and how to change that when you're doing when you're monitoring databases and you see that some need more free space or less? Or...
The free space parameters, free block frequency factor and free space percentage, that's what you're talking about. That's a parameter that can be changed during an online reorg, yes.
What I'm asking about is, I understand that you can, it appears from the documentation that it can be used both through DBRC and through the vSync control statement, but what I'm concerned about is which one would take precedence over the other if they were different.
Okay, the one you are using in in IDCAMS is the one for secondary indexes.
For only secondary indexes.
Yeah, that's the only one. That has nothing to do with HowDB, with nothing. So free space CI and free space CA is only valid for KSDSs. And all the other parameters, let's say an ESDS does not have a free space parameter in DFAM. So all the other parameters are DVD parameters, which when you go to HowDB, you can have them now in the partition, yes.
Because what I saw in the documentation indicated that when you utilize the free space parameters in recon, it applies to both your, or I should say all three of the data sets that are associated with any particular partition.
That's one of the limitations of HowDB. In non-HowDBs, you could specify the free space CI, free block frequency factor and free space percentage on the data set statement. And in HowDBs, you only can specify them in DBRC on the partition statement.
So that the VSAN statement is meaningless?
The VSAN statements, by the way, are meaningless anyway. They are only for KSDSs, remember?
Okay.
And the difference between HowDB and non-HowDB is the free space frequency factor, are therefore the partition, which means all data sets. If you have multiple data set groups in a partition, it applies to all of them. And in non-HowDB, you could specify them on a data set statement. Remember, on HowDB, we don't have a data set statement anymore.
Right.
So that's basically what's driving it. Most people assume that you are not using multiple data set groups anymore. In 99 of 100 cases, you went to multiple data set groups because of space. There are cases where you didn't, yes.
Thank you, and we'll pause just a moment to allow everyone a final chance to signal by pressing star 1. Again, if you're using a speakerphone, be sure your mute function is turned off so your signal reaches our equipment. We'll go to Ralph Neuber of Cigna.
Hello, Christian. How you doing?
How you doing, Ralph?
Okay. I noticed in the online reorg facility, the takeover phase does the notify reorgs and all those good DBRC notifications.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see where it's doing a delete database if you're going from a non-HowDB to a HowDB. Isn't that part of the process?
That is not part of the OIF process. That's part of the conversion aid process.
Okay. But if I wanted to use ORF to convert from non-HowDB to HowDB.
You have to have both products.
Okay. In order to make
right.
it look
impact-wise. Yes.
Okay. The other question is the migrate X command, we don't use that because we're using other vendor products.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I suppose that's inherent in that product.
We basically use during conversion whatever utility you have, which we have tested, and we have tested standard IMS and IMS tools.
Okay. I have another question. ORF looks pretty interesting. However, the unload file is temporary, it says.
Correct. You can have you can specify a permanent unload file if you want to.
Okay, that was my question, if we could do that. And do you know what format that's in?
Standard HD.
Okay, that's standard HD.
Standard HD unload file.
Okay. The full length. Okay.
Correct. I have to check if we expanded in that case. I don't know.
Yeah, because currently we create different formats, whether it's a standard, a short, an extra short, that kind of thing.
OIF has an additional feature which I didn't mention. He can run an unload only.
Okay. That's good. That's good to know. Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. And with no further questions, I'd like to turn the conference back over to Sally Tuscany for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'd like to thank our customers for your time today, and also to Christian, certainly, for all of your expertise and all your knowledge about the subject. If anybody does come up with a question after this call, please call me. I can be reached at 724-940-6506, and I will make sure to get in contact with Christian and get your questions answered. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Thank you for your participation. That does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.